Ah, back off a sports weekend and into the sports rush. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch in the producer's chair. We're ready to roll. We got a big show all the way up till 6 o'clock today. Of course, we've got a lot of sports news. Over the weekend, even big sports news breaking here in Indiana earlier today. Coming up on the show, we'll have Brendan King, who... this guy works all different markets. I mean, he's up in South Bend covering the South Bend Cubs, where he's their play-by-play guy. But then over the weekend, he was down at the Indy 500 racetrack covering the time trials for 107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis. And so we'll get his take on what he saw over the weekend, any surprises, and how about this run by Scott Dixon? Record-breaking speed at Indy. Will it transpire, and will it, I guess, translate into the race? Will the race be equally as fast, as the cars might change their setup slightly? We'll talk about it with Brendan King coming up later this hour. Also, hour number two, we've got TinCast manager Brian Esposito, and we've got KB, Kevin Bowen from 107.5 The Fan down in Indy, to talk about the latest breaking Colts news, that Nick Foles is now a Colt. That's right, the Colts signed Nick Foles as a backup quarterback. Of course, he's got a relationship with Frank Reich, which we talked about, the Colts signing a quarterback that had a previous relationship with Frank Reich before. That didn't work out so well. But I think the Colts pretty desperate to have some type of a veteran backup. Now, I think what this tells us clearly is the Colts believe they've got a team that can win right now. And they're not going to take any chances of wasting that opportunity because of an injury to an older quarterback in Matt Ryan. And so they went out and got a backup. And I don't know what it's going to cost. I would assume it was pretty affordable because the Colts kind of sat back and they didn't jump and run at Nick Foles. They sat back and waited. I think it works as a good partnership for both sides. Foles was not going to get a starting job anywhere. So he's got to look at where he can go as a backup and get a situation that he likes, that works well for him. I don't think it's about the money. I don't know if you've seen any dollars associated with this, Caleb, but I'm guessing it's somewhere in the vicinity of a $5 million a year deal, which would be fair for a veteran backup. I wouldn't want the Colts to spend a whole lot more than that, but I don't think Nick Foles would sign for much less than that. So I'm just going to say neighborhood of $5 million. But Nick Foles, officially a Colt, and like I said, I think this is an indication that the Colts really believe they've got the pieces in place. They went through and they took care of their more immediate needs. Backup quarterback wasn't number one. A starting quarterback was. They got the starter. Then when they knew who the starter was going to be, you got to find a backup that can step in and run pretty much the same offense. And then you've got receivers, and you had to find, you know, ways to fill up those receiving spots. The Colts drafted Alec Pierce with their top pick. They went and got a tight end in the draft, Jelani Woods. I think he's going to play significantly. They fixed up the defense where they felt they had holes defensively. They added some depth pieces, and they finally got around to saying, okay, are we happy with Sam Ellinger being our quarterback if we really believe the rest of this team has been built to make a run toward a championship? I'm not saying I believe the Colts are in a position to make a run to the championship, but the Colts believe they're close enough that it's worth getting a veteran backup quarterback, and that's what they do in signing Nick Foles today. So Colts take care of that. What do you think about it, Colts fans? You can always connect with us on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862, 46862. Huge weekend in sports. In fact, just to give you an idea, I actually went from a Tin Caps game directly to the Coliseum for WWE yesterday. And the show is like 3 hours long. Really didn't want to spend that much time there. But of course, they put off the few names that I know in WWE end up being at the very end. So I have to wait through all these people. I have no idea who they are until finally there's a few of them that take the stage, like Alexa Bliss. Okay, I know her. Why? Well, you can figure it out. I know Becky Lynch. Why? Well, I knew her before she was on the show, but we've become very close in my mind. But, you know, and it's funny because she's taken on this villain role. She's the bad girl now. And then, of course, Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, I know them. And so it really wasn't until late in the show where I actually thought, hey, I know these people. I've seen them before on TV. I'm going to have to check out Raw and just see if any of them that were here yesterday are on Raw tonight. But I went to that last night. Caleb, I know you spent the weekend down in Indy. I'm going to, you know, I waited to ask you a question until you got a good bite of that granola bar. Because it's granola, and so it's chewy. And so you can't just answer a question right away. So I've got to sit here and stall my question for a moment or two. But this weekend, while I was doing Tin Caps baseball, and by the way, Tin Caps, great job Saturday night with the tribute to the Fort Wayne Daisies, bringing in former Daisies players plus former players from the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that played back in the 50s. And they had, I believe, five players that were in attendance signing autographs for the fans. Tin Caps wore special jerseys. And unfortunately, the Tin Caps did not score a run in a 1-0 defeat on Saturday night. And then they come back on Sunday, got shut out again. So not a good weekend out there at the ballpark. But I spent my weekend at the ballpark primarily. And then WWE, you were down in Indy. And so you got a chance to see history being made as Scott Dixon ends up being the pole sitter. Shouldn't be surprised that Scott Dixon wins the pole. I don't think that was a huge shock. What about the speed? Were you surprised that he eclipsed 234?
Not after what we saw on Saturday when Rinus VK had a lap at 234.7 miles per hour, which was the fastest lap turned all weekend. And you know, that was a huge shock to see that number. It was still, no one even came that close. I guess Dixon came the closest, but he didn't top that lap. That was the fastest lap turned in qualifying. But Dixon, second straight pole. You go back to 2020 when Marco Andretti barely beat Dixon for the pole. Dixon nearly a three straight poles for the 500. Quite an accomplishment. And he's become a guy who's gotten better at qualifying with age at the Speedway. His first pole win back in 2008, but he was a pole sitter in 2015, 17, and obviously now here in 2021 and 2022. So he's figured out qualifying later in his career. It's just, can he get that second win? That is the ultimate question next Sunday.
Well, and that's, he lives in Indianapolis. He seems to, over the last decade, maybe be the most dominant driver, not only at Indianapolis, but in IndyCar, if you look at the whole decade. Why doesn't he have another win? What is the problem with Dixon getting more victories than what he's got?
Well, he's great as far as the series schedule goes at maximizing results at tracks where, okay, he has a fifth place car that day. He gets fifth as opposed to taking unnecessary risks and chances. He's great at points racing. But I think the difference, and I'm stealing this from one of my friends who kind of made this point, I think last year, where it's the same question being asked. For whatever reason, whether it's the Ganassi team, whether it's Dixon, again, they're great at points racing and for the championship. But when it comes to Indianapolis 500, you have to have that extra edge. And for whatever reason, just does not have it. And it's puzzling because he is the greatest IndyCar driver this generation. One of the greatest, arguably the greatest IndyCar driver of all time. When you look at his number of championships and wins, you can make that argument, you know, up there with Foyt and Mario Andretti. But for whatever reason, I think his ability to get the most out of a car, but maybe not push it past that limit. It, again, great for the championship, but for the Indy 500, it's a different kind of race and you have to be lucky as well. And he's won one race, but he's been unlucky in other circumstances.
What you're basically saying is there are moments at Indy where you can go status quo as far as making a decision during the race. You can kind of go status quo or play it safe, take the conservative route, and maybe you know you can be a top five finisher. Or you might have that moment where if you take the risk, you might have a better shot to win, but you could also end up out of the top 10, maybe even out of the top 15. And yeah, what you're saying is drivers that win generally have that moment and go with the risk reward instead of this playing it safe. And there's a lot of guys that consistently finish, you know, near the top at Indy that don't win it, like a Scott Dixon, because when it comes to making the bold move, they're not willing to take that chance because they're so consistent all year long. They'd rather win the year-long championship than risk it at Indy and end up losing a whole year, plus losing the Indy 500 because of some bad decision that was not the conservative decision during a race.
Yeah, and you know, some years he's just been flat out unlucky. I mean, in 2020 when he was dueling with Takuma Sato, Dixon dominated that race, and Sato got past him, and on a day that was pretty hot, and it was tough to race that year as far as passing goes in August of 2020 in the rescheduled race, and Dixon had a couple runs, but Sato protected his racing line. Dixon couldn't get by. You go back to last year's race, and Dixon was the pole sitter. He laid back early, let the young guns like Colton Herta and Rinus VK lead early. He saved fuel. Well, then there's a caution. Dixon still hadn't pitted yet. And so on the surface, he saved a lot of fuel, which he's one of the best, if not the best at in the series of doing so, to go extra laps. But then at that point, caution's out. You can't pit at that time because it was a closed pit under caution. And he ran out of fuel, had to get emergency service, penalized, race was done.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of it's luck, some of it's, you know, being aggressive and picking your spots. Now, it's not always going to pay off if you're super aggressive. We've seen that go both ways for Takuma Sato, especially at Indy, but more often than not, it's going to work out your way.
In some ways, though, that decision at the time may have seemed like the conservative one, but in hindsight was the risk and reward one. It was almost like, you know, they took the chance staying out and ended up paying for that chance because the risk they were taking was if we get a yellow, we're going to be in trouble.
As some of the broadcasters on NBC say during races, you know, he's in the danger zone. That means you're leading or in the group of leaders and you've stayed out longer in the stint as a lot of people have pitted. That's when you're in the danger zone. You know, if a caution comes out, you're screwed. And right. That's what happened to him last year.
Takuma Sato, we talked a lot about him being the hot car, the fast car during the month of May at Indy. What happened to Sato?
I don't think anything necessarily happened. I think he kind of showed the speed that he had.
And he qualified 10th, by the way.
Yes. I don't know if he was ever a threat for the pole per se, but for him to make the top 12, I think that was a realistic position. So I don't think that was a huge surprise.
And Rinus VK, wasn't he your pick to win the pole?
Yes, he was. And almost
he
had it.
Yeah, he did get the first row, finished third, the third fastest speed. But he's like 3/4 of a mile per hour slower than Scott Dixon. Three laps yesterday that eclipsed 234 miles per hour. Dixon had two of them on his first two laps of qualifying. Alex Palou had the other. He ended up finishing second, so he's in the middle of the first row. Biggest surprise for you as far as qualifying?
Yeah, I think to me the biggest surprise, I mean, outside of the speeds were amazing to see, but I think the biggest surprise is how much the Andretti Autosport team struggled. Not that I expected them to be contending for the pole, but with their five cars, it's the rookie Romain Grosjean who puts in the fast 12. I don't think anyone would have expected that. And the struggles for Herta as he's way back in the pack, I think, what, 25th, 26th? And then Alexander Rossi also back in the pack after he put together, I believe, one of the fastest times on Fast Friday, was fast in the Saturday morning practice. He didn't know what happened on Saturday after his qualifying run. So I think, to me, that was my biggest surprise over the weekend.
So maybe they just missed the setup for qualifying with the conditions. There was some wind. Temperatures, did they drop before qualifying, or did they stay warm on Saturday and then were cooler on Sunday?
So,
of course, these guys only qualified on Saturday, though. I should point that out because they didn't make the top 12.
Correct. So it was very overcast most of the day on Saturday. And if you were in that early, you know, top 5-6 in the qualifying order, a lot of those guys put together great times. They got good draws, and that's when conditions were best, especially starting at 11 as opposed to noon. As the day went on, it warmed up. There's still some good cloud cover. Sunday, there was some cloud cover. The temperatures were a lot cooler, but the wind was more of a factor compared to Saturday.
And so, yeah, so let's talk about that, because Chip Ganassi seemed to have it figured out. His car's qualified really well. Andretti, not so much, almost like complete opposites. Both of them, I think, have five cars in the field, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And Ganassi's five all finished in the top 12, didn't they?
Yeah. I guess the only surprise for me, we saw Jimmy Johnson's speed Friday and then the Saturday morning session. Not really a major surprise that he put in the top 12. And he, I think the surprise is that he saved his car on his qualifying run to compete for the Fast Six. That was an incredible save that most guys, they would have been in the wall. I think Kanaan having a good qualifying run, maybe a minor surprise, but I mean, he qualified well last year as well with that team. But I guess we haven't talked about him yet, but Penske, they put one in the Fast 12 or top 12 with Will Power. Scott McLaughlin actually made his starting position worse by going out again late Saturday.
Yeah, he was like 15th or 16th, wasn't he? And he decided to take another shot at the 12 and dropped all the way down to 26th.
Yeah, so that backfired. Joseph Newgarden was saved by a yellow for Lightning as he was on the warm-up lane starting another run. He qualified 14th. Pretty nondescript performance from him. I think with Penske, this is multiple years in a row they've struggled in qualifying, which is quite surprising because they're a team that normally dominates. However, race pace, we'll see what they have, because Simon Pagenaud, who's now with the Meyer Shank team, but he went from, I think, 26th to 3rd last year on a late charge. And you have to qualify better with these cars with the aero screen. It's a little bit tougher to pass than before. And also the weather's going to play a factor. If it's really hot, it's going to be a lot tougher to pass as well on Sunday.
And that's something I want to talk to you about next hour, is how far back in the field can some of these guys actually challenge to win this race? Because you've got a lot of fairly big names that are back a ways. Like in row 8, you've got Marco Andretti. In row 9, you've got Colton Herta. You've got Elio Castroneves. Row 10, Juan Pablo, which, of course, he hasn't really been all that competitive. But, who else have you got back there? Well, and if you go up to row 7, you've got Rossi, Graham Rahal. See, can he compete in this race at all?
You know, he had a great run last year until an error on a pit stop and a wheel came off and he led some laps. But they qualified a lot better last year. They were lost in qualifying this year, the entire Rahal team. With the other two drivers for that team on the last row, Christian Lundgaard and Jack Harvey, I don't think he has a shot. I mean, you got to qualify better, and that's kind of been his Achilles heel in the series for several years now, and I just don't see it this year.
And so that's what we'll talk about a little bit next hour, is where is the long shot as far as some of the bet numbers and betting and the odds that we've got? Because last year, Caleb, you helped me nail the long shot, Elio Castroneves. I think at the time that we talked on this show, he was 42-1. I put a fairly significant wager on Castroneves based on your confidence in him. Not necessarily that he would win, although you thought he had a good shot to win. But I went with the fact that you were so amazed and shocked that the odds for Elio were 42-1. That you couldn't believe. You said, I mean, that's way out of line. And I thought, well, if I'm getting that kind of advantage in the numbers, I'll go ahead and put a significant bet down. And if it strikes, it'll strike rich. And sure enough, it ended up being a big bet for me on race day last year. But we'll talk about that. A lot more coming up with Indy 500, including Brendan King, who was reporting from the racetrack for 107.5 The Fan down in Indy over the weekend, and we'll get his take of what he thought about qualifying. Also on the way, TinCast manager Brian Esposito, and we've got Kevin Bowen, morning show host at 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis. Big day coming up on Friday here on the, well, I guess it's on the radio station, not on the Sports Rush, because on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM this Friday before the Sports Rush, from 3 to 4 p.m., we've got a special live broadcast taking place from the Indy 500. It is, I guess it's a live edition of New Track Record. Is that what we're calling it, Caleb?
Yeah, live radio show. And we did a streaming show back in 2019 for the Indy GP, but this is a little bit bigger deal.
And it will be live here 3 to 4 p.m., And does that mean you and Justin will be both at the racetrack on Friday?
We will both be at Carb Day on Friday.
3 to 4 p.m. Plan it. Lock it in. Book it. It will be this Friday right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. And, of course, new track record. I don't know what the schedule is for the podcast, the actual posting of podcast. Do you go with the regular schedule this week? Do you have extra editions? How do you do it?
Extra editions again this week, just like last week. We'll be talking with more drivers. Episodes dropping Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with the live show, obviously, Friday afternoon. That should be posted on Saturday.
I know we've got somebody lined up, I think, live on Wednesday.
Yes, Rinus VK, who we had on last
year. Rinus VK. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that should be fun.
Yeah, how cool. For front row. Front row Rinus VK.
Yeah, his worst qualifying position is fourth in his 3 years. He's done quite well for himself.
Yeah, he's fast, but he's also a risk taker. Is he too much of a risk taker being in the front row?
I don't think so. I think he'll probably learn from starting up front last year, leading laps, having that experience, and I think he's a much more complete driver even compared to last year when he was coming off his first IndyCar win. He's had a really good season so far, kind of getting back in it after an injury last year kind of really derailed the second half of his season. So we'll see what he can do on Sunday.
He's part of Ed Carpenter Racing, though, and we know Ed Carpenter's history at Indy. Qualifies great, can't win the race. Indianapolis resident. In fact, didn't he grow up, born and raised in Indianapolis?
Well, he was born in Illinois, but he's the stepson of Tony George.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, very close with the family.
But Ed Carpenter has notoriously had tough times at Indy, winning the race. I mean, he seems to always qualify well. Again, he qualified fourth inside of the second row. But with Rinus VK, he's part of Ed Carpenter Racing, and the other two drivers in the front row, Chip Ganassi Racing. Is there a difference with your race team on what you expect from race day, the history, the experience that they have, and race day setup? You know, you have more cars to maybe feed information to. I mean, what is there a handicap, I guess, that Rinus has to overcome being part of Ed Carpenter Racing?
I don't think so. I mean, he's an IndyCar race winner. He's gotten a pole before, not at Indy, obviously, but he's had success in his young career, only in his third season. I think the only advantage that Ganassi has that we know of is quite simply more cars, so they can pull more data and kind of rotate strategies a little bit more. Ed Carpenter Racing, a three-car team. Connor Daly, the third car, I'll also chat with him this week. But I think the ultimate question that we don't know the answer to, we'll find that out Sunday, Honda versus Chevy. Honda wins qualifying battle as far as outright speed, but who's going to win, have the better fuel mileage and race pace on Sunday? That still to be answered.
How important is it with the current setup of the race cars to have a teammate as maybe a drafting partner or somebody that you is? Does it matter in IndyCar? Does it matter with the way the cars are set up? Does it help? Does it hurt? Do you have to have that? I mean, you know, we've always heard about race cars working as a tandem, trying to play front and back and maybe switch positions so they can both save fuel mileage. Is that something that's important? Because obviously you have more players to pick from if you've got a bigger team.
Yeah, I mean, it's important if you have the option, the opportunity. So say you have a teammate who's a lap down, you know, they could play nice and maybe hold up some people ahead of you and let you, you know, give you an opportunity to move up. Or, you know, if you're trying to save fuel, you could just ride behind that teammate for a bit and then take off when you're good to go. But ultimately it just depends on who has the race pace between Honda and Chevy and making the fewest mistakes in pit lane. That's always one of the biggest keys. Don't make mistakes on your pit stops. Have, you know, 5, 6, 7 clean pit stops. You're going to set yourself up to win.
What they got a chance to do earlier today, Wildcat Baseball, which is a Fort Wayne tradition. I played Wildcat Baseball. I coached Wildcat Baseball for 5.5 seasons. Great organization. In fact, that most of the board members of Wildcat right now are coaches that coached when I played, or maybe coaches that coached right after I played. One, actually, I played with. He was a teammate of mine. But Wildcat Baseball, nothing better And hopefully everybody's getting signed up for Wildcat. It's actually going to start, I think, in like another week or so. June 1st, I believe, is the kickoff to Wildcat baseball for this summer. And today they had their annual luncheon in which they recognize the champions of the SAC in baseball and softball. Plus, they recognize the all-conference first team players in both baseball and softball. And it turns out being a nice lunch, great recognition for the kids and for the teams. And so congratulations to the champs that were recognized today. In baseball, it was a tie between Dwenger and Snyder. And in softball, it was Northrop that was the SAC champion. In fact, I think for Northrop, that makes it back-to-back. And Dwenger, they seem to continually be right there at the top in the SAC baseball as well. But congratulations to our winners this this past season. And, of course, sectionals get started coming up within the week. Tough weekend for the Tin Caps. And tough might be an understatement. The offense basically took a couple of days off. No runs, two straight games at home. Shut out both Saturday and Sunday. In Saturday's game, they lost 1-0. But back-to-back shutouts at home. The Tin Caps lose the series to the Whitecaps 4-2. Now they've got a series that starts tomorrow against Quad Cities. Quad Cities, a team that has been struggling. They've played in Dayton, so Quad Cities isn't going to be home for a couple of weeks, and maybe the road will wear them down. But the Tin Caps have to find a way to, number one, get some runs, but number two, win more ball games. That's pretty much a simple answer. But the nice thing, over the weekend, the Tin Caps had huge crowds again. I mean, it's been 3 years since we've seen Parkview Field filled up like it was this weekend, with over 8,000 fans on Friday, over 7,600 in the place on Saturday, and another 6,000 or so yesterday. So great crowds over the weekend for Tin Caps baseball. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more talk about this weekend's qualifying. Brendan King, who reported from the Speedway for 107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis, he will join us. He also just happens to be the voice of the South Bend Cubs. He'll join us on the program next. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. After all the talk leading up to the time trials this weekend, of course, everybody wanted to talk about the youngsters and all the young guns that get a chance to maybe race for the pole and how fast they were going. And of course, it's the old Wiley veteran, Scott Dixon, who sits on the pole after the dust is settled. And we're going to talk about that right now with our guest that joins us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. He is not only the play-by-play voice of the South Bend Cubs, but he also does plenty of work down in Indianapolis for 107.5 The Fan and reported from the racetrack over the weekend. It is Brendan King. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett, thanks for having me, man. And I saw KB's coming out a little bit later, so you're getting everybody from.
Yeah, I know. It's just like all we got to do is find a place to fit in Jake, and we'd be all set.
Yeah, exactly.
We got the gang covered here. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this weekend. I saw your reports you posted online and saw your reports from the racetrack after everything was all said and done. Biggest story of the weekend for you, was it the speed? Was it a disappointment? What was the storyline you came away with as the biggest story of the weekend?
I think, Brett, it's just how committed Scott Dixon is to getting a second Indianapolis 500. And that was something that actually Jake Query was talking about on the post-track show, is, you know, Scott Dixon, Brett, has done just about everything you can do in IndyCar, and he's barely, you know, 40 years old. You know, he's a guy that is going to continue getting older, and his legacy is eventually going to go down. But if he wants to be looked at, along with the Unsers and the Foyts and guys like that, he's probably going to need a second Indianapolis 500 win. And as crazy as the race was last year with Elio getting number four, you know, Dixon getting the pole a year ago, he did not talk about his car this week the way he talked about his car last year. I think he was a lot more confident with his car a year ago. But the fact that he gets the pole and also becomes your fastest pole winner ever, I think that tells you exactly what Chip Ganassi Racing is offering this year, especially the fact, too, that, Brett, that Chip Ganassi got all five of his cars into the Fast 12. So even though Dixon was not raving about his car as much as he was last year, the fact that he gets the pole, the fact that he puts up that number 234 plus, he's gunning for that second Indy 500 win, Brett, and he might as well get it.
Going to ask a question about a couple of guys that make Indianapolis their home and a couple of older drivers. And they've always been, or it seems like they're regularly, consistently successful during the time trials, and then they end up maybe not having the same kind of success on race day. Scott Dixon and Ed Carpenter, over the last decade, who do you think is probably more disappointed based on the success they've had qualifying and maybe the disappointments of where they finished with the race?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I think since Dixon does have an Indy 500 win at least, he'll be a little less disappointed than Ed is. I mean, this is what Ed does. This is what Ed breathes. You know, I'm a Butler guy. Ed's a Butler guy. We've gotten to know each other a little bit, and he's a great dude. But the fact that he has pretty much gone to the owner route full-time, he doesn't run the road courses. There are some ovals he doesn't even do anymore. The Indy 500 is his bread and butter, and he's consistently shown that he's one of the best qualifiers to ever grace 16th in Georgetown. You know, he's got three poles and almost got a fourth yesterday, and he's going to start right up front in that second row. So I don't think there's any reason why that Ed Carpenter cannot compete. He's had some things not go his way the last couple years. You know, in 2020, when nobody was at the track except for the drivers, the pit crews, and the media, you know, he was out of it pretty early. Last year, he sort of disappeared to the back early on, and then he was able to still post a top 10 as he snuck his way back into the race. But if he can hang around that second, third row as the day goes along, and as you know, Brett, anything can happen at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I'm somebody now covering the race for my third year. I truly believe, and I've been a fan before that, that the track picks its winner every single year. Is the track going to pick Ed Carpenter? We'll have to see.
Brendan King, 107.5 The Fan, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. What was the bigger story from Saturday, the success of Chip Ganassi Racing or maybe the disappointment of Andretti?
I got to go Andretti. I got to go Andretti, Brett. And even throw in there, I realize Will Power's in the Fast 12. Throw Penske in there, too. We were all shocked that Scott McLaughlin had gone out on Saturday when the yellow flag came out after that for Newgarden. But, you know, McLaughlin goes out 15th. He ends up being 26th. We're looking at each other in the media center saying, what in the world was that? But you're right with Andretti Autosport. You know, Colt Mahurta, engine failure right away. Alexander Rossi is as frustrated as a guy that I have seen around the track. You know, he still wears a smile and he's great with the fans as Alexander Rossi, but man, he just cannot find something to go his way over the last few years. And then same case for Marco Andretti. He gets on the course, right, to go qualifying. Takuma Sato's still out there on his cool down lap. So I have to imagine, I saw Mario Andretti on a golf cart after yesterday's action concluded, and you know, you saw Michael Andretti, it was either Peacock or NBC, he was shaking his head after Colton Herta was only able to get into the 20s. So I got to go Andretti.
Well, and you've got a number of those guys that are in the 20s and back in row 7, 8, 9 that are pretty good names. And before maybe we knew where they were going to qualify, we would have considered them possible contenders to win this race. How far back do we look at this field and say, yes, they can still get up to the front? How far back do you think they, you know, realistically can be? Can someone from the ninth row make it to the top?
That's to be determined, but we know how aggressive Elio Castroneves can be. We know how aggressive of a driver that Colt Mahurta is. And then even look a row behind them in row 10. What does Juan Pablo Montoya want to do this year? I think that's the question from Arrow McLaren SP, because the other two Arrow cars in Felix Rosenquist and Pato O'Ward, they're each in the Fast 12. And for whatever reason, Juan Pablo Montoya's car just did not have the same little oomph going to it. Juan Pablo is a guy that finished in the top 10 last year. He's looking for his third Indianapolis 500 win. If last year was any indication, because he did not qualify well at all last year, Brett, either. Qualifying his last couple of years have been pretty egregious, but he still found a way into the top 10. But again, what kind of day is Juan Pablo Montoya looking for? Is he cool finishing the race and just settling for a 15th, 20th spot? Or does he want to make a run for the top 10? Could that row 10 Juan Pablo Montoya, how aggressive will he be on Sunday? That's what I'm looking out for.
Always great talking to you, Brendan. Now, what's your schedule? You going to continue doing South Bend Cubs games? Or are you just working down in Indy? What's the schedule like for you?
It is going to be a bit of a crazy week, Brett. I'm in South Bend right now. I'm actually talking to you from Four Winds Field. We start a series tomorrow against the Great Lakes Loons. So I'll call the games on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Head down to Indy for Carb Day, but we'll be there for Legends Day on Saturday, and then race day on Sunday before we head to Dayton next week. So it's going to be a lot of miles, but this is a week that I think any broadcaster will dream of. So can't wait to be back at the track and to be calling some games this week, too.
Absolutely. We'll look forward to seeing you back at Parkview Field some point this summer. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate you.
Yep, that is Brendan King joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline Talk at Indy 500 Qualifying. And Scott Dixon, who is in the poll. Now, we're going to have to get into this at some point because, Caleb, you were my lucky charm last year and found me the long shot to place the bet on. I'll tell you this. I got bold. I got confident. I got cocky. Before I even came in here and asked you, Caleb, I've already got a couple of bets placed.
I'm curious on who.
I bet you are. But I've got a couple of bets placed. And it in part because I think they can win, but in part because the odds, it was worth putting a little something-something on them. But I will tell you after 5 o'clock.
All right, there's a tease.
There's a tease. I got to have a tease. The boss tells us that we've got to tease and always be moving forward with the show. So there we go. 46862. By the way, Caleb, I am now officially off the Dallas Mavericks bandwagon. I have jumped. I have decided not to stay on a sinking ship. Oh, man, that was one of my bad whiffs.
Friday night, I was running some errands, getting ready for this weekend, going to a couple stores, getting some stuff that I needed. I came back and watched that game, and I think I turned it on, right around halftime or just after. It would have been right before, and they cut it to 14 at the half. It kind of seemed like, oh, they're making a little bit of a run here. Third quarter, they come away with the lead right before the end. Fourth quarter, just take it to them. And I mean, that was a series right there.
I mean,
right?
That's the thing. Is that Dallas, was it. Dallas can't hold on to anything. They just screw it up as they go along. And, everything that Dallas did well in game two that gave them every shot to win the game, that's like they went to halftime and they forgot what it was. I mean, they moved the ball. They cut away from the ball. They had Golden State's defense really scrambling. Shooters were getting open looks. And all of a sudden, everybody kind of stood around in the second half. And they all watched the ball screen action. And it was bad. And so I have decided to accept my L and move on. I'm dropping the Dallas Mavericks and my pick for the Mavericks to win this series. Yes, if you missed the show, I am admitting.
You had them in what, six?
I had them six or seven. Six.
Yeah, I had the Warriors in five. I think Dallas can put it together and win at least one game here, though. I still think they'll win a game.
But what more can Luka do? I mean, that's the thing, is I thought Dallas is going to pull out some wins here just because Luka is going to be the most dominant player on the floor. He has been. But Golden State has really shown depth. They've gotten contributions. I mean, Looney, who, probably wouldn't have played if it wasn't for an injury, Looney is becoming a key weapon. Dallas can't rebound. Wiggins looks like a top pick. I mean, they're getting contributions from so many different players. And of course, Klay Thompson now is really starting to feel comfortable. And, it does kind of remind you of the Golden State of what, 2015? Was it 15 when they won before LeBron beat them in 16? Is that right?
Yes, 15 they won the title. 16 they choked.
But they won the title in 15 with or without Durant? Because I'm going back pre-Durant. Right, so 15 is what it's reminding me of, because you've got Draymond, you got Klay, you got Steph Curry, and then you got a couple of role players in there. And at that time, it was what, a young Andre Iguodala? Was he on that team?
He was on that team. He was the defensive stopper. He was the finals MVP.
He's the Wiggins of this team. I mean, yeah. But even though he's still on the team, he's been replaced. You know, the part of Andre Iguodala is being played by Wiggins. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Still coming up on the show, Trace Jackson Davis is coming back to Indiana. I'm going to pose a hypothetical question and just see what kind of answers we get. Also, Colts big news earlier today. We'll talk about the impact of that. And we've got TinCast manager Brian Esposito, plus Kevin Bowen, KB, joining us for 107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis, as Brendan King pointed out. Apparently, Brendan is following our bookings here on the show. He knew that we had Kevin Bowen also lined up today, which I didn't even think about the fact that we were going to have two of the guys from down there up here. But Kevin Bowen, who hasn't been on for, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? It's been a while.
Since the Colts schedule release. But I think I had him on right before the draft when you're out a couple days.
That's right.
That may have been the last time.
That's why it doesn't seem like I've talked to him too much lately. But Kevin Bowen will be joining us coming up at 5:35. Stick with us. We're here until 6 o'clock, Monday edition of The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.